Chris, welcome to Podcast Peldroid, episode 113. It is less than a week to go to the Euros. My name is Russell. And how are you all, gents? Would you like to introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Gareth. I'm well, thanks.
Hi, I'm Leon in Innsbruck. I'm good as well. Thank you.
Hi, Rich. I'm loving life in Cardiff.
As usual.
We've all got our wall charts up, tournament wall charts. How's the stickering going?
Slowly and expensively. I'm not going to lie, I haven't given it the same level of commitment as the 2016 one. The novelty is not quite worn off, but the hit to the wallet certainly has. So,
and now that you said that, it feels it creates a safe space for me to admit the same. It hasn't quite been as enthusiastic. So yeah.
And my kids are that bit older as well now than they were 5 years ago, so they're more reliably sticking stickers in straight and, you know, at the correct angle. So there's less really for me to do. You know, I'm able to take a bit more of a backseat. You know, I'm move upstairs, you know, sort of director of stickering rather than the actual sticker book manager.
They've earned your trust, yeah?
yeah.
It doesn't get, well, I mean, maybe in 20 years' time once we keep qualifying for things, I don't know, maybe it does, but there is a sense that one shouldn't take these things for granted. Another tournament coming along.
No. Yeah, true.
Yeah, maybe that's a good place to start, actually, Russ, because I was just thinking about this. So I did a little interview with Five Live the other day, and just the first question kind of threw me a bit because it was very general, and I was just kind of, I just ended up trying to sum up my feelings about going into this tournament. It's almost like, I mean, 5 years ago, it was just such a novelty, wasn't it? And everything was so new and it was so exciting. And it was just, and then going there and being in Bordeaux, it was just so emotional and so sort of cathartic. It was almost like, in a sense, perhaps too emotional as much as I loved it. And with this one, I'm a bit more relaxed, and I'm like, okay, this must be how it feels to be a sort of normal small football nation that is quite good at football and actually qualifies for a few tournaments. You know, just like, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to watching some tournament football, and there's just not this sort of frenzy this time. It's exciting, but it's not quite so emotional, poignant, and sort of frenzied.
Yeah, I was having pretty much the exact same thoughts over the last few days, to be honest. I kind of, yeah, like you say, it's not the kind of same intensity level, but I'm actually looking forward to the tournament way more, in the sense that, oh, it's going to be, yeah, it's another tournament. We're there, of course. It's going to be great. It'll be really fun. And I think we've got a good chance of doing well. I just really kind of feel after the 2016, it's just a regular thing that's come around again, and it's brilliant, and I'm really looking forward to it in a very nice, relaxed kind of way.
I wouldn't go as far as to say, like, last time we were happy just to be there, but if we'd have gone out of the group stage, we'd at least have been able to say, look, we've qualified for our first tournament in decades, we've got something to build on, and then we would have still had that sort of excitement around it. This time, the fact that it's going to be so much harder for a decent number of fans to be at the games and in the venues, and the fact that we were in the previous Euros means, like, I don't know, even with a harder group this time, expectations are a bit more, and, you know, the potential for disappointment, I guess, is greater. If we lose three games and come home early, you know, I think we're really going to feel like that's a big underachievement in a way we might not have done 5 years ago. Equally, I think there's plenty to be positive about that we can do well.
Yeah, definitely. And in some ways, that kind of makes it a more authentic tournament experience, I think, because, like you said, on the previous one, it was just like incredible to be there. But now we can actually enjoy it as completely legitimate international football fans, I think, which is wonderful, really nice.
I'm going to update my LinkedIn with that now. Authentic international fan. And I'd agree with all that. There is that. There isn't that sense of the unknown and that sense of awe and wonder to the same extent as there was in 2016. And I think that's good, that's healthy, if we want to be, you know, like you say, Leon, one of these, albeit smaller nations, but one that has a fairly consistent, at least, track record of qualifying. And I've made the comparison before, but a bit like the Republic of Ireland in the 90s, I suppose, or late 80s into the 90s.
Or Croatia.
I think what takes...
You're only slightly bigger than us, and you've been in a World Cup final, World Cup semi-final. You know,
absolutely. I think
Denmark.
I think for me, I think it's slightly diminished in the sense that, and I think it does contribute to this, is the sense it feels just so spread so thinly as a tournament. That whole sense of, I know a lot of tournaments aren't held in just a single country anymore because of just the size of them. It to me occurred this week. I thought, well, do you know what? I'm glad that when we did get to a tournament finally after so long, that it was a bit more of that authentic tournament format as well, in the sense that it was all in one country. The fact that it was France and so close, you know, helped as well, I guess. But it does feel a little bit diminished, this whole kind of being spread out. But, you know, it is what it is, and we've known it was going to be this way for quite some time. But then I suppose the flip is, well, you know, I suppose it's glad it's happening at all, because perhaps it has been a bit touch and go on occasions in this last year, whether it was going to go ahead, and certainly whether there was going to be fans or not. So all of that is good, and I suppose it's behind us. So yeah, it's great this come around finally.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like ages since the last one as well. I mean, in terms of, and you know, in summer international tournament, because of the delay, it's been 3 years, and then five years for us to see us again. So it's glad it's here, and really looking forward to watching some tournament football, because it's just one of those things that I've always loved since I was a kid, and it's been there all my life, and hopefully it always will be, that sort of sense of excitement when a tournament starts.
And the pre-tournament friendlies, where we're not the cannon fodder for other teams who are going, and just to help them, we had a couple obviously last week. You know, it's a week since more or less since the France game, for when we're recording now. You know, a huge amount has been said about that game. For 25 minutes, it was looking good. I thought that was about as competitive as we've been against a top nation for a long time, because we've talked about in the past when we played them previously in Paris and we didn't really lay a glove on them. Spain swatted us aside pretty easily. England, albeit not with a first-choice team on our part, and so on. So it was nice to be going toe-to-toe, and then, I don't know, the game loses relevance after 25 minutes, sadly, doesn't it, with the red card, which I think we probably all agree was a bit of a travesty of a decision. Was there much else that we took out of that game beyond the fact that Danny Ward was absolutely brilliant that night and kept the score respectable?
Well, he genuinely, almost way too obvious to say, but that was by far his best performance for us, I would say. He was excellent, but for me, it was just seeing Nico Williams playing in that role before he got sent off. Again, it seems like another option, and a lot of people kind of feel this is a guy who should be further up the pitch, maybe even kind of more central, but he was superb. Like, he was really, and you kind of think, well, if he hadn't been sent off, and he'd have stayed on and he would have carried on playing the way he was playing, would that have affected selection for the first game in terms of where he is on the pitch? And it still could even be that, even with what he showed, maybe that was enough. This is kind of the really interesting thing. Again, kind of going back to 2016, we knew what the team was and how it was going to play, and it was very, and that has advantages in itself. But this is going into a tournament, and there's real kind of interest and intrigue about how the team's going to line up, I think.
Do you think there's an extent to which there's too much confusion over who's likely to start the first game?
I'm feeling too much confusion, but I would hope that Robert Page isn't. I think he will know what he wants to do. But it is one of those things where you can really make a strong argument for a couple of different teams, maybe two or three different teams with different formations and different kind of emphases on different parts of the pitch and stuff. I mean, it's really like fascinating.
I wonder now about that, well, front three, as we seem to be persevering with it as, that the fact that Kiefer Moore didn't start either game
does indicate that they really are trying to sort of persevere with this sort of fluid front three as a way, I guess, to try and accommodate, you know, Bale and Daniel James without too much sort of defensive responsibility for them. But it is starting to become quite stark how it doesn't tend to work. And then all of a sudden, Kiefer Moore comes on and the game is transformed. It happened in the Nations League. It happened in World Cup qualifiers, and it's happened in these friendlies. And I wonder if in a tournament, maybe by the second half in the first game, or I don't know at what point it comes across the three games, you know, it can potentially be too late to decide it's time to give up on that sort of strategy. I can see the attraction of the sort of false nine thing with Ramsey and the front three, but I've yet to see it work really well for us in any game.
Consistently. I think, you know, you look at the Belgium game, we started really, really well, scored an absolute peach of a goal. Was that without a striker? Without a, you know, an authentic striker?
Yeah.
So I think it's worked in glimpses, and I do wonder whether there's an away from home, you know, it suits us away from home a little bit more. That came to mind after the Albania game. But whether home and away distinction is relevant when you're going into a tournament, I'm not quite sure.
And I suspect we've never tried it with James, Ramsey and Bale being those front three and Joe Allen then in the midfield as well. So I guess if we've got our strongest players, you know, who have a little bit more sort of experience of playing in kind of flexible systems, or who's kind of, you know, understanding might, you know, be a bit better. If you think Allen, Ramsey and Bale all together have got a lot of experience playing together, maybe that sort of fluidity will come. But, you know, it didn't seem to me that the likes of Brooks, when he was involved, Tyler Roberts, looked particularly comfortable across those friendly games.
Just kind of looking at particularly the France game, I mean, even particularly before the sending off, but even kind of at points afterwards, Bale and James are looking really, really superb, I think. Bale has become like a master of like managing how he moves and how he runs and stuff. But he's looking incredible. There were signs to me against France that he was looking unreal, like in terms of his pace and control and movement and stuff. So I think there's a big, big tournament coming from him. And I think Dan James is going to have a big tournament as well. So it's just like, who is the person who's going to get the most out of them? I personally would say that's Kiefer Moore, in terms of he's the one who can help them convert assists, and he's the one who can hold the ball up and sort of drag defenders in a different way. But then you can make a huge case for Ramsey being able to do that as well, albeit in a completely different way. It's a tricky one. It's a really difficult decision. One thing that did cross my mind was Kiefer Moore being the kind of player he is, where referees tend to sort of side one way or the other. Typically, they would side against him, from what we've seen. And also, I guess, the analysis of our opponents in the group. We know Kiefer Moore scores and can do well for us. I was just sort of wondering whether they've just been working on the false nine, knowing that they're going to start Kiefer Moore, and they just don't want to expose that too much. Because it's a hell of a weapon to have him, and people aren't quite sure if it's going to be him or not. So that's possible. But I mean, I don't know. I really don't know.
And we need that backup plan, don't we, as well, I guess. But you're right to mention James and Bale. They do their best work with Kiefer Moore on the pitch. And I think the same will probably be true of Ramsey. You know, Moore provides that sort of focal point that allows Bale and James to move in different ways. And Ramsey will be able to kind of take advantage of that. So it's very hard to square the circle of getting everybody in the team kind of where you'd want them, because it kind of extends then to thinking about the shape of the defence. If we want to sort of accommodate both Nico Williams and Connor Roberts, you know, are we better off with three centre-halves to allow them a bit more licence going forward? And then Ben Davis's role comes into it. So you can't, you know, there aren't 12 players, 13 players in a football team. You can't have everyone in their best role for Wales. So someone somewhere is going to be sacrificed, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm just looking at our lineup for the Hungary game where we qualified, which was such a superb performance. Maybe our sort of best performance in a competitive game of recent times. And, you know, we had a front four then of Kiefer Moore, Bale and James sort of either side of Ramsey playing as a number 10 who scored twice, obviously, that game and was superb. So, I don't mean, I don't know what Robert Page is thinking exactly, but I mean, I'd be tempted to go with that as a front four against Switzerland. Why not? I suppose it depends what he wants to do in defence then, doesn't it? Like, you know, is he going to go with a... You can't fit them all in if you're going to go with a sort of back five or three centre-backs and two wing-backs or four in the midfield. But I would hope that the analysis has been done of Switzerland. I don't know a huge amount about this Swiss team, to be honest, other than that they're pretty decent. They've been on a decent run. But you'd hope that, you know, that we've kind of analysed where their weak points are and we'll pick a team to expose that.
I mean, obviously, I suppose it goes without saying they've been doing the analysis. I mean, you see the pictures of the steps up to the plane of both the squad and then the backroom team, and there's, you know, as many, if not more, of the backroom team as there is in the squad. So if they are trying to do that sort of perform that sort of sleight of hand a little bit for our opponents by keeping Kiefer back, as Rich is saying, then, you know, that might prove to be a bit of a masterstroke, because, you know, there's not many players like him on the international scene. So I'm sure one or two countries will have a big guy up front, but it's not as if we play direct and aerial to him when we do pick him, certainly from the start. I mean, maybe towards the end of a game if we're chasing it, but we haven't been chasing that many games either. So, yeah, I find it interesting that if we are doing that, then it seems to be, it almost seems to be quite a, sort of like an old-fashioned sort of trick, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, who knows? It might prove to be an effective one if they don't know who they're going to be coming up against.
And I suppose another angle is arguably across those two friendlies, he was one of the players who didn't really need the minutes. Mm. You know, he's had a hell of a long season. He's played a lot of football. You know, he probably needs his rest as much as anything. And I guess that was a positive, wasn't it? That all of the players who needed time had, other than Nico Williams, but that was sort of resolved, luckily, by his being available for Albania. They all had the sort of time you'd want. You know, Ramsey and Davis got half hour against France and then were able to start and play an hour against Albania. Ampadu got a decent amount of time. Bale had a decent amount of time. So we're going into the tournament with those players getting ready at about the right time. Those minutes will make a difference, hopefully, in the next couple of weeks.
Which is in marked contrast to 2016 when we were worrying over Robson-Kanu and Ledley. Yeah, I mean, the worries about Ben Davis seem to have been completely evaporated. He looked to be absolutely fine. I thought Ramsey was moving really well as well in the Albania game. Didn't see a huge amount of him in the France game, I don't suppose. But the Albania game, he looked to be moving efficiently and smoothly, and there was something reassuring about that, because here is that little bit of a nagging doubt about him. I think I've read some in it. He's played in something like only 19 of the internationals since 2016. That's a really, really poor return, let's be perfectly honest. Moving on to the Albania game. Terrific to have some fans, albeit back in the stadium. Again, not a great first half. I didn't really think it was as bad as some people making out. But again, just useful exercise, keep us ticking over. We don't read anything into the result, do we, in these sorts of games? We didn't do particularly well in the friendlies before 2016. So, and we know what happened there. So, 0-0 at home to Albania in other circumstances would be a bit of a disappointment. But we put them under a bit of pressure in the second half, and we're never really at any... I think they had one shot blazed over in the first half, but apart from that, they didn't really threaten us. So, again, it was pretty much looked compact. Defensively fairly resilient, as we have been. Chris Meppham improved a hell of a lot for me, which was another big tick for that game. In the second half, he was a little bit rusty, I felt, in the first half, but he back to the Meppham that we saw when he first started with Wales in the second half, I felt. Again, all of those were sort of like the boxes we want ticking, isn't it? Was there anything else we'd have wanted out of that game?
I mean, on Chris Meppham, I'm not sure I was quite so reassured. I thought across the two games, he didn't do himself that many more favours. You know, he was slow to react. You know, I know it's Mbappe and whatever in the first game, But then he was caught out pretty badly early in the game for the Albania chance. And I don't know, I just feel like that's part of a pattern now of, you know, a switch off, a mistake. You know, you can see one or two of those in most games with him now. And in a tournament, I don't know, I feel like he's got one of those in him, you know, most games now. And he did improve as the game went on against Albania, but it was only Albania. And I don't know, I found it quite interesting that Ampadu started in that back three, but then went off when they reverted to the back four. And that Ben Cabango didn't feature really at all across the two games. So it doesn't look like he's in the running to start. But I don't know, Mebham's still a nagging doubt for me.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I agree with Russ in the sense that he did improve a little bit, but he could only really have improved. I think he was poor prior to that. And that's kind of a worry for me. I mean, in kind of looking at how I would, what my personal team would be, right now I would kind of go for, I'd go for Ben Davis ahead of Mebham as a centre-back with a lot of passing ability. He can do the job there. I just think if you've got Mebham, it does look like he's going to make a mistake, guys. I agree with you. And that in tournament football, that's a complete disaster if that happens, because we're not a team who really scores a lot of goals. And if you're up against Italy, if you make a mistake and they score, that's a huge, huge uphill battle then. So yeah, that's a little bit of a worry for me, I think, is the who partners Joe Rodon. Maybe it would be different if Joe Rodon was 4 years further along in his career, and he'd kind of grown in stature. I mean, he's got immense stature already, but he hasn't got the kind of the games and the experience to sort of guide someone, I don't think. And Mebham kind of seems like he needs that at the moment for some reason. It's kind of quite alarming how backwards he's gone since he broke through. But yeah, I was interested in Cabango not coming on. I kind of felt like he would have been right in there potentially for selection. So that was interesting. Centre back. Has anyone got any ideas how we can solve that?
It's a certain worry that there's a couple of people who aren't really making a claim then. For me, I've read those two games as those two friendlies as in respect to Cabango, was that he's not particularly prominent in Page's thinking at all, really. I know there's been a lot of people sort of talking about, you know, he's got a big future, and you know, I think that you know, clearly that's the case, but I can't see him starting any of those fixtures. Lockyer was interesting because he was training on his own in the warm-up before the Albania game, and he was doing... Did any of you see that, the little kind of footage? I think Luton Town released it, and I think the FAW then on the social media kind of picked it up and circulated it, how he was just doing kind of little drills, sort of fitness drills, you know, with one of the coaches, and it was the same sort of drills that he was doing, and he did go and join in with the substitutes, or the people who in the squad who weren't starting that game. He had a very limited role, and I don't recall seeing him come on to even, you know, during the halftime warm-up either. So, you know, he's still a little bit off 100% match fitness, I suspect. So I don't think either of those are going to start. So then it, you know, it begs the question, well, it's a shootout between Mebham and Davis, as you say, Rich. He hasn't done himself a huge number of favours recently. But then, you know, I suppose it's a bit of an old cliche as well, but sometimes you just have to play your way through poor form. And if he is going to come out the other side of it, and that second half in Albania, against Albania, was him kind of coming through, because I thought he was a lot better. You know, hopefully that trajectory now is on an upward course. I don't know.
I guess whether it's a shootout between Mebham and Davis depends on how we line up. I mean, if we start back three, Davis is definitely in the back three if we play with a back three, I would say, and Rodon. So then maybe it's more, is it Ampadu or Mebham? I think Mepham's probably got the shirt at the moment, but I don't know. I think I would prefer Ampadu in that role. And interesting also that when Ampadu went off, they played that back four with Davis as part of a centre-back pairing, didn't they, initially? I think there was another change again then when Rodon came on. So there seemed to be a willingness to try out Nico Williams on one side and Norrington Davis on the other, and Davis as part of just a centre-half pair in a back four, which seems a little bit cavalier in some respects, depending on who else you've got in the team. I imagine Joe Morrell would certainly play under those circumstances, but it could well be part of their thinking. Interesting to see that. So there's loads of uncertainty, I guess, around that, which worries me slightly. But
this time 5 years ago, it was just a question of who starts. Is it Vokes or Robson-Kanu? And when does the substitution get made?
Yeah.
That's a bit unfair, but there's a lot more going on.
In the end, it was neither of them, because it was Johnny Williams, wasn't it? It was a bit of a surprise. And then, sort of Danny Ward to start. That was a very last-minute thing because of Hennessy's injury. So you'd want to go in with a kind of quite a settled team, but it rarely happens. We wouldn't have, I don't think many of us would have guessed at what the starting 11 would have been against Slovakia 5 years back, and we played well. So it seems like there's a lot of areas up for grabs, because then it sort of depends as well, doesn't it? You know, if you play Ampadu in defence, then you're probably bringing in Joe Morrell into the midfield then to play alongside Joe Allen, and then all these sort of permutations, and we're not quite sure about pretty much any position. Obviously, like Bale will play, but we don't even know like what position Bale will play. So it's going to be interesting to see what the starting lineup is.
Shout out from Morrell. I thought he was really good against France, albeit backs to the wall effort, and was practically almost playing centre half himself on occasions. He was having to drop so deep, but I thought he was excellent that night against obviously far more stellar opposition than he's used to facing in the at club level. He doesn't face a huge amount of opposition at club level, does he? That's the problem. But
but better opposition than he's used to playing for Luton reserves.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he's making himself harder and harder to leave out. Joe Morrell, I think, you know, it is always obvious how much more sort of functional he is than someone like Ampadu, but I think he's got every right to feel like he's well ahead of Ampadu for a spot in the midfield. You know, he does what he does well. He seems to raise his game whoever we play. It was a kind of bit of a false picture because of the way the France game went with the sending off, but he really had to do a lot of what we normally need him to do against France, and I thought he did it well all the way through. I think, you know, Ethan Ampadu, if he gets to play in midfield at Morrell's expense, should feel really fortunate. I think he's been a real revelation, you know.
Couldn't agree more. And we've been fairly consistent in our praise for him. There's still, some players have that, don't they? There seems to be like a core of fans that sometimes just take against a player, and irrespective of what they do, just never seems to be able to win them over. But you know, people have their reasons. Okay, so let's look ahead to Saturday. What's interesting is, I wasn't aware of this until I put up my wall chart. The group, when by the time we play our first game, the group has already taken on some shape, in the sense that Turkey and Italy play the day before. So we'll know who's got points on the board, and, you know, if Turkey maybe can hold Italy to a point in that, that really gives us, well, and the Swiss for that matter, an opportunity to steal a march. So how do we think the opening round are gonna play out? Well, I put a poll out against Switzerland, win, lose or draw, and it was something like only 4% respondents thought we were going to lose. By that reckoning, there's almost 100% consensus that we will be unbeaten after that first fixture, which perhaps goes to prove the point made a bit earlier about how, you know, confidence and expectations being higher, certainly higher than they were 5 years ago. People are confident.
Good. I think it's a bit unfortunate the way the draw has kind of given us that order of fixtures, because on the face of it, you'd say drawing the first game might not be bad and Switzerland a decent team or whatever. But with Italy there at the end of the group and as our last fixture, you feel like we're going to need to win one game. And that game is most likely to be Turkey or Switzerland. Probably Switzerland are those two, looking at recent form. And I don't know, with the uncertainty we were talking around selection, it'd be interesting to see how well prepared we look, you know, after another week from the friendlies. But I don't know, I feel like even a draw against Switzerland, although in and of itself seems like a good result, in terms of the way our three fixtures pan out, I think we need to win that one.
Yeah, I think that would be probably how I would see it. it's not the end of the world if we draw, but I think they'll be looking, thinking it's really important to get a win. And I think we will win. And I just got a feeling that, I mean, I cannot mention them before, but Bale and Dan James to me just seem just right at that kind of tipping point of they're just going to do something really, really nice. It's taken me a little while to kind of really, really see how good Dan James is. He's such a, like a, an outlet for us. And he's improved like his decision-making. I know Malcolm Allen on Espedarec was talking quite a lot about this. James, he's a lot more intelligent now, which I guess comes with experience and stuff. So I think we're going to see some rapid counter-attacks and probably a Dan James winner. That's kind of what I think.
Bale scored both times he's played against Switzerland previously. That's a good sign. I mean, going back 10 and 11 years for these games when he was a youngster. But that's maybe something. And I get a feeling with Bale that he's been so focused on this tournament for so long, isn't he? Like the whole, he's said it several times, the loan move to Tottenham was about getting himself right for the Euros, and he wanted to be playing games in the build-up to this. And seems with the way that his season went, like it's kind of, he's on track to do something. Let's hope he can really do something special. So yeah, maybe Bale will be the difference. They don't have a Gareth Bale. I don't even think Switzerland have a sort of Hamsic. You know, they've got really good players throughout. They've got a really strong squad, and they've got players playing in top leagues throughout Europe. But I don't think they've got that sort of, like, you know, magic player. You know, that, I mean, Xhaka from Arsenal is their captain. You know, Shaqiri perhaps is their sort of star man. These are good players, you know, at top clubs, but they're not like these sort of box office stars, are they, at these clubs? So maybe Bale will make the difference.
It's hard to know the standard they're at, isn't it? I mean, the one friendly they played in the last week or so, they battered like Liechtenstein, but how much do you sort of do you take away from that? They've started their World Cup qualifiers, you know, well. They won 3-1 in Bulgaria, and they've again, beaten sort of Lithuania. So they haven't faced any great opposition. So, you know, though they're one of those teams who tend to maintain a pretty good seeding, and they seem to get okay groups that help them do that. But they never really turn in sort of, you know, eye-opening performances. And I guess those are sort of names Leon mentions. They shouldn't be something we need to fear. You know, that Turkey and Italy game, I guess, that'll really maybe, certainly from the fans' point of view, focus the mind a little bit more, because it's likely to create an opportunity for whoever wins the game between us or Switzerland, you know, to get a win on the board and to be really sort of set up to go through. You know, either if Turkey lose, well, that puts them chasing the group straight away. But more importantly, if they were to get something against Italy, you know, they are strong favourites then for top two in the group. So it'd be interesting to see what happens on that Friday night as a way of judging what we need to do come Saturday afternoon.
No, absolutely. I think the way the Slovakia game, you know, not the way that it panned out, but the relief, obviously, for us because of history, getting that first on the board as well, that mattered. But it is a marker down, isn't it, for the tournament? It's a marker down for your group opponents when you've got those 3 points on the board. And that's a big, big statement to make. I think as well, you know, within Switzerland then facing Italy next, as you say, you know, if we can beat them, suddenly they've got to really come at Italy. Whereas, you know, if they beat us, they're then thinking, okay, maybe we can not sacrifice the game, but we don't necessarily need a huge amount out of this game otherwise. So it's just West tournament football, isn't it? It's just a fantastic kind of dynamic. There's so little margin for error. And it's just great that we've got none of these uncertainties around injuries like we had sort of last time. That sense of the unknown. I think that's where the experience of, is it the eight, isn't it, who were there in 2016. You know, you can imagine them being given the stage by Paige at some point this week to say, okay, you know, this is what it'll be like. This is how, you know, these are the things you're going to have to deal with, and just to impart some of that wisdom and that experience to some of the younger members of the well, the younger members of the squad, but the squad, you know, the members of the squad who haven't been there previously. You made a point, guys, talking about Switzerland's World Cup results. Turkey have come out the traps, you know, flying, haven't they? And I don't know. I mean, social media is never a great barometer for these things, but there does seem to be quite a confident set of fans and from Turkey's perspective, almost a little bit overconfidence on their part going into this. Have they peaked a bit too soon, maybe?
I don't know. They're the ones I'm quite worried about. I mean, they've had a really strong start in the World Cup qualifiers as well. You know, they beat Netherlands 4-2 at home back in March. Their most recent game was away in Norway. They won 3-0. They look to be flying. And, you know, they've dropped some points against Latvia. You know, so maybe that gives us a little bit more of a sort of inclination. They're not all that special, but I don't know. They seem to be a sort of team in the ascendancy again. It's been quite a long time since they've been a real sort of force in European football, you know, thinking back to their World Cup semi-final all those years ago. But the draw could have been kinder to us, certainly.
And if we keep them to under six, that's an improvement on that one time we played them.
So,
do you know much about Turkish football, Rich?
No, not a huge amount. They're clearly a team in good form and they're feeling good. But I think it's a case of and I'd even include Italy in this. In every single fixture, the result can go either way. And I mean, of course, that can happen in any game, but there is like a real sense that it could. I mean, we're not going to know. I mean, I don't think we're going to know until games begin and we're going to see kind of what the dynamics in the camp. I mean, you just haven't got an insight into this. I think it's a really tough, well-matched group, and I'd say we've got as good a chance of finishing in the top two as any of the teams. Like, I don't discount us finishing first, to be quite honest. If we're going into the Italy game, if Italy have to beat us and we just need a draw, and this is for Italy to qualify, we might beat them. I mean, that's with the kind of counter-attacking ability we've got, that would be incredible. I would love to kind of have another huge traditional scalp at a tournament, and I don't rule it out at all.
Yeah, and Italy don't feel quite as stellar as some of the other more traditional superpowers of the European game. I mean, I know they're on a terrific run. They haven't lost in yonks, but it's an interesting kind of critique of Mancini's selection kind of approach is that, you know, he is picking players from, Sassuolo, I think, have got someone in the squad, and it's Spezia, I think, and teams like that. The tradition of sort of Inter, Milan and Juventus, those three basically dominating selection, that's not the case to the same extent anymore. And I think that the media have sort of bought into that a little bit. And I think there's a youthfulness to it. But at the same time, Guy Andrea runs a coffee shop around the corner from me, doesn't rate Italy's chances at all. So it's a funny one. I wonder whether that's maybe just, I don't know, maybe a bit of a hangover from missing out on the 2018 World Cup, which, you know, for Italy not to be at World Cup is just ridiculous, really. And it's just maybe just sort of them playing down their chances a little bit. I don't know, but they're a hard one to call. But it doesn't feel like it's a Spain or a, dare I say, England or France or Germany.
Well, it's definitely not a France, and it's definitely not a Belgium. I mean, I think it's there to be had for any of the teams. And this is why, of course, like any tournament, the first game is so vital. If we get a win in the first game, then absolutely we'll feel like, well, certainly we're going to qualify. It's there to be had to top the group.
Yeah. I'm just looking, just to go back to Turkey, Russ. I mean, as impressive as, you know, beating the Netherlands and beating Norway, well, hammering Norway 3-0 as results. If you look at some of their other recent results, I mean, even when they've drawn impressively against good teams like Germany and Croatia, those games were last year, 3-3. So both of them. So like they're conceding goals, they're scoring goals, but they're conceding as well. I mean, they beat Russia 3-2, but you know the sort of the two for Russia is interesting for me. Even the Netherlands scored twice in that game that they lost 4-2. Azerbaijan scored against them recently. Latvia scored three against them. And in the Nations League last year, they lost home and away to Hungary, who I didn't think were any great shakes when we played them in the qualifiers for this tournament. So you can look at it sort of either way, can't you? I mean, obviously their fans are going to be on the sort of glass half full side. I just think they'll ship a few goals.
Yeah, that's quite positive looking at it that way, Leon, isn't it? I think maybe Turkey have got a little bit of a sort of inflated recent reputation. I mean, it really stood out, I thought, that win over the Netherlands right at the start of the World Cup qualifiers. I guess because by that point, I think that we'd probably already knew that we had them in our group. So we were maybe paying that a bit more attention. You know, maybe we've got an exaggerated sense of where they are. But I think that kind of backs up what I was saying earlier about the need to get points on the board in those first two games. If they're a team that can be got and we can score goals against, if we've got our sort of defensive sort of uncertainties sorted out by those early games, then that game especially, but hopefully the Switzerland game as well, are there for us to go and win. To come back to Italy, I think maybe, you know, okay, they're not a Spain or a France or whatever in terms of the sort of star names anymore. They've got 11 clean sheets in their last 12. You know, they've just blown Czech Republic away 4-0 in a friendly. They're not always spectacular, but they've won all three of their World Cup qualifiers so far 2-0. They don't concede goals. And if we go into that game needing to win, that's going to be really, really tough. I mean, I think maybe the advantage or the possible advantage, depending on how the group pans out, is if they've won their first two and they know they're through when we play them, you know, maybe that gives us a little bit of a chance to sort of catch them cold or catch them sort of resting things for the players for the next phase. I think they're potentially a better team than people are giving them credit for. Maybe unspectacular, but they seem set up to get result after result and not to concede goals. And until we start scoring and again, get a bit more freely, and we haven't really at any point as yet, then it seems hard to imagine us carrying the kind of threat we'd want to against a team like that.
Yeah, they haven't got the sort of star names in attack and midfield that you'd associate usually with Italy, have they? But I mean, you've got to say, like, Mancini's done a great job. He's proving that he's a really good manager at this run that they're on, and the lack of goals they've conceded, fair play, considering he doesn't have the sort of firepower and the sort of, that sort of stardust of vintage Italy teams of the past. Obviously, good players throughout, but yeah, there's not really a sort of Paolo Rossi type player there amongst their squad. Looking down at their squad.
No, but it's all relative, isn't it? You can imagine sort of players like Insigne and Immobile. I mean, they're more than good enough to give.
You
know, we talked about Chris Metham and his sort of mistake in him. Their movement's great, isn't it? You know, they're more than capable of giving our defenders something to think about. And certainly if we've got sort of a level of uncertainty about who's in our lineup, you know, I don't want to keep banging a drum about that, but, you know, let's not kid ourselves that these aren't really, really good top level players. If not world superstars.
Yeah, I mean,
if
you look at this sort of their defence, and Cianelli and Bonucci have got 209 caps between them, the Juventus. I mean, I don't know how many times they've played alongside each other altogether, because they play alongside each other for Juventus as well. So, I mean, that's some experience there, isn't it?
That's only combined in about half the total that Buffon got, isn't it, or something anyway. But
I think we want Italy to win that first game. I think they're going to be the sort of clear front runners for the group. I think I'd take second place in the group now. So Italy to beat Turkey would be great. But I'm going to be more positive in terms of our game. And I think we could win that. You know, I sort of reassured by the way we've talked about Switzerland and looked at their results and thought about the players they've got. Player for player, I think we're a better team than them. If we play it the way we can do, if we get everything right and hit the tournament, peaking at exactly the right time, there's nothing to say we can't beat them well. You know, I reckon 2-0, 2-1 to us in Owen.
Nice. Rich?
Well, I think for our game, I think we're going to win. I'll say 2-1. There we go. With Dan James scoring the winner. For Turkey, Italy, well, I'm just going to say I think Turkey will win. And that would be very, very interesting then for our game with them. There we go.
I was going to go for 2-1 for us as well. But yeah, I've said it throughout. And it's you know, I was asked by a couple of friends what I think the other day, and I think, yeah, it'll be tight. It'll be a tight game, but I think we might just have a little bit more up top than them. if we can keep it tight. I think Italy will beat Turkey 2-0 on Friday.
I'd quite like that game to be a draw. I think it just kind of pegs them both back, and I think it is going to be a tight group. I don't think anyone's going to steamroller this group. I've thought that for a while. So how should I call it? Yeah, I think the first one will be a draw, the Turkey Italy game. I don't think there's going to be many goals in our game with Switzerland. I think you could go 1-0 either way, to be honest, but I'll say 1-0 Wales. So that's four wins, isn't it?
Let's be nice. Positive.
Yeah. Positive, you love it.
Well, safe trip to all those venturing out to Baku for it, which of course is far, far closer to Turkey as well. So there's a slight advantage if that's what it is, in terms of proximity for them. Enjoy whatever plans people have. There's no fan zones and things. There's none of those around, is there? So yeah, which probably makes it a little bit more low key than this time 5 years ago when every man and his dog were heading out across the channel. But there we go. We'll get together. We'll review the opening round early next week. But until then, thank you very much.
Thank you. Enjoy.
Cheers. Bye-bye.